is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are it.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Let's go here with the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710, SeattleSports.com, Seattle Sports app, and yes, all the podcast platforms out there as well. Hear all that energy? Do you hear that excitement, all that energy? How awake I am?
Caffeinated?
No. Just trying to show you the difference between me today and the Mariners yesterday. That's what being awake is. And what we saw from the Mariners yesterday was just sleepwalking through a game, essentially. And that would probably be putting it kindly. I'll come back to them in just a moment or two. No, I'm pretty awake today. I'm going to take a little nap because we've got a big night ahead of us.
Justin,
Maura, G, Scott, and I are all going to see Luda tonight, which is... going to be interesting.
Yeah, to say the least.
So I realize today, well, I mean, there he is. Yeah, bring me some Luda. Uh-huh. It's a clean version.
Sure hope so.
This one's just an instrumental.
It's just a little instrumental.
I do have some with Luda in them for, we'll play them throughout the day.
We should. We got to get ourselves ready. Got to get ourselves psyched. Got to get ourselves in the mood. But I realize that I really don't have anything to wear to Ludacris. Like, it's not close.
You don't have a sweatsuit you can just put on to just blend in?
I don't have a sweatsuit. I don't have anything.
You should let G dress you for tonight.
Well, Maura, I'm glad you came up with that idea. Because that is exactly what I was thinking about. Now, here's the problem. I'm a medium in most things. Not a schmedium, just a medium. Well, sometimes a schmedium, depends. But I'm a medium for the most part. I asked G because he was wearing that nice Mariners coat the other day. And I said, hey, what size is that? Because I kind of had it in my head, like, maybe, but he's an extra large. So anything that I put on that G owns is going to be gigantic on me. So I don't know whether it would truly be able to achieve the look that we'd be going for. Also, I don't want to be accused of, like, I don't know, anything inappropriate either. But I feel like I don't know what to wear to see Luda. So I'm open to suggestions. They have to be things that I already own because I'm not going out to buy stuff for this.
You should have kept that beast mode coat.
I know. If only I had kept it for the last 8 years, then I finally would have had the right thing to wear tonight to the show. But I am really excited to see Luda. I don't know what I'm going to wear. So if anybody has thoughts or advice, I even would have worn one of G's crazy pairs of shoes, but he's like a size, I think, 13. And I'm 11 and a half. So I can sometimes get into a 12, but a 13 seems like a stretch. Yeah, like I'd be falling, like tripping and
stepping
falling
out of the shoes of everywhere you went.
Exactly. So thoughts are certainly welcome as we get ready for tonight, and I'm sure we'll be chatting. I see if I can get G in here today to kind of
thought about it. I don't know what I'm going to wear either.
Yeah, but you got a lot. You can just wear like Mariner gear, I think would be like an appropriate thing for you to wear. I just, Maura, do you know what you're wearing tonight?
Jeans and a top.
Oh, okay.
A top.
Okay. You know, well, I guess that's what I'll wear.
It's a top. You wear a top.
Like a fitted t-shirt and jeans?
A fitted t-shirt and jeans?
Yeah.
Do you have like a short sleeve?
Maybe it's easier for girls. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm...
Why don't you just go all out? Wear a tie. Wear a suit.
Wear a suit. Yeah, that's just what I want to do. I don't even own a suit anymore. All right. I've been putting it off long enough. Yesterday was awful. That's a terrible game, man. It really was. It was bad. Is one of the worst baseball games I can remember watching. And I'm sure that if I were pressed, I would tell you that there were probably a whole bunch of others. And yes, it's a little prisoner of the moment, but that was terrible. Every single part of that game was bad. I guess they didn't make any big base running mistakes, mostly because they didn't have a lot of base runners. But the pitching was bad. Defense was worse. The offense did nothing. Anemic, terrible. Wrote about it, SeattleSports.com. Of all of the things, and I do want to talk about what Scott Servais does next, because I've seen a lot of people and some of the frustration. I saw one guy yesterday saying, well, the Mariners made an effort to get rid of the high strikeout players. They're still striking out. I think it's logical to think something else is the problem. No clue what that would be. Maybe it's the batter's eye or the team approach. Whose fault is that? Well, they tried to change the team's approach this offseason. Is it working? No, not right now. Is that because the new approach is flawed? Or is it, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, said, well, maybe it's just taking them a while to get into it. It's harder to do once the lights turn on. It's one thing to do it in Arizona. It's another to do it when the lights actually turn on. And, you know, sort of like a new golf swing. If anybody who's ever kind of went to the range or worked with a pro or something, says, okay, I got my new swing. It's easy to do at the range. Then you get into a situation where you're like, man, I know I've got to hit this shot. Do I trust this new approach? It's a lot harder to do. So maybe it's that. You mentioned the batter's eye. Tell you what, I normally would scoff at that. Did you hear Teoscar Hernandez basically say that that was in his head all of last year? He didn't like the batter's eye here. He's like, and he said, look, it might have just been me. He was pretty clear about like, hey, I'm not saying that I'm like that they're the problem, but it got into my head early in the year that the batter's eye was weird and I wasn't able to pick the ball up well. And it just bothered me all year long. So one of the reasons he chose to go to L.A. was because he really liked the way he saw the ball there. Sounds bizarre, and I'm not, like, making excuses for anybody. I'm just repeating what I had heard that Teoscar Hernandez
right,
said.
Right, cue all the, well, every other team they has all do that, too.
But they don't have to do it every day, right? Mm-hmm. They only have to do it for three games or whatever, and it doesn't get into their head for nearly as long. So, again, I'm not saying that's why the Mariners are having problems hitting. That seems sort of absurd, but it was interesting that somebody mentioned that as a possibility on the same day that I heard Teoscar Hernandez complaining about exactly that. One thing to note from yesterday's game, I mean, it's just body language. It's so hard to judge, but you could see George Kirby just getting visibly upset. And I understand why, right? He wasn't pitching well. He wasn't having a very good game. And the defense behind him, guys, so there were zero errors made by the Mariners in that game, which is laughable.
Yeah, right.
The rules for what constitutes an error in baseball, it couldn't be more absurd. But there were no errors in the game. And the Mariners made what I counted as eight plays that either could have or should have been made. Eight. Eight!
I mean,
I know we spent some time yesterday.
Most of those in one inning.
That's right. I know we spent some time yesterday talking about the weak, you know, how they weaken themselves at least four defensive positions, but I probably should have added in backup catcher. Sebi Zavala had a terrible day, and he's supposed to be a defensive guy. Like, that's why he's in there. He can't hit. He's there to play defense. That's your job, man. It's one thing when you've got some big slugger, right, where you're like, hey, I can live with some, you know, iffy defense because I know he's going to hit 35 home runs or something. Sebi Zavala can't hit. He's not supposed to hit. Nobody expects him to hit. He's here to play defense and to catch and to give Cal a day off. If that's what you're going to get on Cal's day off, can't have him. And I don't mean to overreact to one bad day from Sebi Zavala, but it's not like he's earned a tremendous amount of grace and leeway. He just got here, and he's a defensive player. You got to play good defense. That's the gig. Polanco going to kick the ball around a couple of times? Okay, that stinks, but he's supposed to be a good hitter. That's why he's here. Not for his defense at second base. Sebi Zavala, that's why you're here. Anyway, watching Kirby, and I think, I forget which play it was. I don't know. It might have been the one where Zavala threw the ball into the outfield, but it could have been any of the eight. There was a moment he just essentially walked away. You know what it was? I think it was when JP and Polanco smashed into each other near the bag. That was kind of the kicker.
That was frustrating.
Right? That was sort of the like, oh my Lord, this can't get worse. And Kirby kind of walked away, and all I was thinking of is, and I think about this scene a lot, in Wedding Crashers, when, what's her name, Isla Fisher, is stomping around with her fingers in her ears because her dad won't let them come to dinner or whatever. And Vince Vaughn just goes, I can't be around it.
I can't be around it. You want to go there with Claire, the boyfriend, and Sybil?
That's so funny. And just the look on his face of just pure disgust of just like, yeah, I can't be around it. He just walks away. That's kind of what George Kirby looked like yesterday, looking at his defense. Like, you see these guys back here kicking the ball around, throwing it around? I can't be around it. I'm just walking away. And ultimately, he took himself, you know, he was out of the game because he didn't have it either, and he didn't pitch particularly well. So,
yeah,
that's where
eight runs being earned, worst start of his career.
Yeah.
Like, that's.
Yeah, earned, quote unquote. They were all earned.
Yeah. That's where on our text thread the other night when we were talking about, like, we have to expect a defensive step down this year, maybe a little, but, like, it can't stay like this because of what you're asking your pitching staff to do. They're going to get so frustrated eventually. And if you do have that downgrade in defense, then yeah, the offense has to pick, someone has to pick it up. I just worry that the team chemistry is going to be off and people are going to start to get annoyed with each other.
Sure.
Like Kirby was frustrated yesterday, rightfully so. But you don't want to see more and more of that. So hopefully at least some parts of this start clicking.
One of the things we talked about a lot at spring training was how everything seemed to be back together, how Scott went on his sojourns and was able to kind of put everything back into the box. He got everything packed up neatly, the suitcase, he zipped it up, he squeezed everything in, he pinched a little bit, he pushed down, he got the zipper around, and all the sort of bad vibes were pushed back into the box. That's fine until you get into a pressure cooker. That's fine until the guy at the airport throws your suitcase and it smashes as it goes onto the cart or whatever, right? Well, this is the first little bit of pressure that it's going to have to withstand. And it's a challenge for Scott. It's going to be interesting to see how the leaders handle it. I'm going to talk a lot more about that at 7 o'clock and some of the options that are available to Scott right now and what I think he might want to do. But I think you're absolutely right, Maura. There were issues that were present into December. Will they reappear if things go awry? Let's hope not. It's only April 3rd, 4th now. This is not a, oh my gosh, panic. This is not going to work. The Mariners are toast. Heck, they're 3-4, not 1-6. Okay? They are not in the, oh my gosh, panic mode. But I do think that unlike in some other seasons, because of the past history, there is a need to maybe handle things a little bit differently than you have before. And you could hear it. It's not normal to get booed at home 7 games into a season where you're 500. But they did yesterday. And it wasn't just because of the 8 lousy plays, the terrible offense, and the lousy pitching. It's because of the memory. Because the last couple of years haven't gone away from people's minds. And if I'm Scott Servais, I'm thinking real long and hard on that flight last night and into the off day today about how I want to handle this thing going forward. So I'll come right back, give you guys everything you need to know. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
That really was a terrible baseball game yesterday the Mariners played. In fact, 7 games now, maybe one of them they put together a truly well-played game. This was obviously the lowest of them all. The pitching suspect, George Kirby, just battered around. The defense, atrocious. I counted 8 plays that could have been made yet weren't ruled an error.
Here's the stretch by George. Needs a strikeout, and the 0-2 to Brennan, swinging a ground ball right side off the glove of Polanco, gets behind him, and here comes Ramirez on to score. Oof. Ramirez was holding at third. Polanco came in, started to look up. It glanced off of his glove. That's going to be an error on Polanco at second base.
No, don't worry. They changed that. You're not allowed to have errors in modern Major League Baseball, and so that became a hit, even though I'm kind of with the original scoring decision. The offense, of course, anemic shutout for the first time this year, but the first lefty they have faced as well. Just brutal all the way around. But, yeah, it started with the pitching.
It was good. We've seen better. You know, I think the sharpness, the crispness to the fastball, part of it was he just never really got any rhythm to get into all of his pitches. So, again, you know, he starts off, he had a really good curveball last time out. He goes to the curveball, hits the guy in the foot in the first inning, and then, you know, it just kind of unraveled from there. Again, a lot going on out there. I think, you know, he, like all young pitchers, you get frustrated at times, and he got a little frustrated today, and he'll have to learn from that.
He certainly did. I mean, you could see it all over his face, and he was frustrated with himself. He was frustrated with the defense. He was just sort of frustrated by the whole day. I'm sure he would have liked to just go home, go to sleep, forget about it, and start over the next time, and I'm sure he will. Brutal game. The good news, they're 3-4, as I said, not 1-6. So they head out on the road to Milwaukee, day off today. Then Logan Gilbert will try to stop the bleeding tomorrow.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, officially 3 weeks from the draft, as of today, there's certainly plenty of options for Seattle. We spoke to ESPN draft analyst Matt Miller yesterday. You hear the whole thing coming up in 10 minutes, but let's make it pretty simple. What should they do at 16?
I still think Byron Murphy would be, you know, he's perfect for McDonald's defense. That's your Justin Madubuike type player. I would be very excited to see him there. Obviously, you know, offensive line has been something a lot of people have talked about, but if Byron Murphy's there, I think you take him. If he's not, then you talk about trading back.
Well, the one other option besides Byron Murphy, right, defensive tackle, is to go and try to help out your offense. Two different ways to do it. You need help at guard. Do you do it in the first round or maybe later?
I'll be excited to see what the offensive line want looks like. Mm-hmm. Is it Fatanu and you just plug him in at left guard? Is it, do you go back to those Michigan roots and say, hey, Zach Zenner is a guy who, you know, unfortunately had a late season injury. It's going to make him a much better value in this draft class. You wait on a Zach Zenner and say, okay, we've seen this. We're comfortable with it. You know, kind of marry the two systems together a little bit.
Yeah, I'm for that one. Let's get Byron Murphy early or trade back and make sure you get Zach Zenner in, let's say, the third round. I want to focus on this at some point. I don't know if now is the time, but if you guys have a moment, you got to go look at this whole Super League that's been proposed in college football. I think this is brilliant. It won't happen because it's too smart, and I think there's so much money and issues with the current deals with all the networks, but gosh, what a phenomenal idea. Essentially, you would bring in all the Power 5 schools, including Wazoo and Oregon State and a couple of other schools, would comprise 70, and then you would get 7 leagues of 10, and then 10 more schools would be in essentially like a soccer style relegation conference where some would stay in, some, you know, you move in and out depending on how you perform that year. And then you just have a regular playoff at the end of the year. You collectively bargain it so the players all get paid directly, but also you're able to eliminate the constant transferring, et cetera, so that guys can and teams can actually build a team, like a plan. It makes a ton of sense, but actually getting everyone to go along with it, something tells me that's going to take some time.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, it's been obvious now for, well, about a month, but with 7 games remaining, the Kraken officially eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs. This after a 5-2 defeat yesterday in LA. They were pushed around physically. They gave up a hat trick to Trevor Moore. It just wasn't a good game. Shane Wright skated more shifts than any other forward, but didn't do a whole lot. Finished with no points, no shots, and a -1 on your score sheet. That is everything you need to know 7:45 here on the Brock and Salk Show.
Lots of suggestions for what you can wear at Luda.
Yeah, anything good? Anything jump out?
Jump out?
No.
No. I mean, I don't think jumped out's the right word. I was going to say, just wear a button-up shirt. Just wear a short-sleeve button-up shirt. It's going to be warm in there.
Really?
Yeah. It should be just fine.
All right. I could think about that. We could look at that. Let's see. Do they not have infield practice anymore? No, not really. I mean, like, they don't take full infield. Most teams don't, maybe occasionally, but it's not like it hasn't been like that in baseball in like 25, 30 years. So that's not like a new thing. They do work on things. They come out for early work. My guess is they're going to do some of that in Milwaukee. Guys will take, you know, some specific ground balls, et cetera. But like your traditional little league infield that everybody would take before a game and at practice, no, they don't generally do that at the pro level. So, all right, let's take a quick break. Matt Miller joined us yesterday. Oh, my gosh, there was so much in there from the good in terms of what the Seahawks could do with the number 16 pick, the in-between in terms of the new market for wide receivers, to the ugly, which would be his thoughts on the quarterback situation here in Seattle. Stick around. You'll hear the whole thing next. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Busy little morning here on Seattle Sports on 710SeattleSports.com. Leading up to a first matinee Mariner game of the season. They start first pitch just after 1 o'clock. Pregame show will get underway after Bump and Stacy at noon. And a little breaking news in the NFL is Stephon Diggs is going from Buffalo to Houston. Not a huge return back for him. In fact, all they get back is next year's second round pick, 2025. And they had to throw in more to get it. So a little surprising. Look, I know that he's an older player, 30 years old. Maybe there's some attitude issues, as you mentioned, Brock, but I still would have thought he'd been worth a little more than that.
I would agree, but you know, when you've got a market in this draft, and you're going to hear it from Matt Miller here momentarily about the depth of receivers in this draft and how it extends Salk with starters into the third round. When you look at what Green Bay has done building their team and with giving Jordan Love a receiver room that's loaded with young dynamic receivers. When you look at what Houston did with Tank Dell last year, I know Rice was an idiot and speeding and doing everything on the highway in Texas over the weekend, but that dude was a difference maker for Mahomes in the second or third round. You don't need to pay $20 million a year to a receiver. You don't need to pay Devontae Adams. You don't need to pay Stephon Gilmore. You don't need to pay, you pay DK Metcalf. Like, you know, I think a lot of these teams look at just kind of the shift of that receiver value. And oh, by the way, in this draft, yeah, Marvin Jr. and Roma Dunze and Neighbors and
it's a pretty good wide receiver draft. And that does affect the market for sure. For more on this, let's bring in Matt Miller, ESPN draft analyst. One of our favorites. Matt, good morning. How are you this time of year? 3 weeks from tomorrow, huh?
Yeah, 3 weeks. Man, what an exciting time to hop on with you guys, though. It's like we planned it. It feels like, huge trade happens in the NFL. And now we're on radio talking about it. This is great.
Well, I was just going to become curious. Like, as you become a star now, right, and you become a really big deal, like, gosh, would he still have time for assault? Would he still make time for us?
That's not the case. Come on. For you guys, no matter what happens, I will always make time for you guys.
Wow. That's really nice of you to say. But I think you're right on the whole star power thing. You know how many Twitter followers Matt has now? How many do you think? Just off the top of your head, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think the first time he joined us, he had 112.
Yeah.
Yeah.
310,000 people following this guy on Twitter. And thank God he has time for little old us here in Seattle. Wow. We just appreciate it, Matt. Your star is blowing up, and for good reason. I love the idea that you had this week with sort of putting together the tiers of who really, how many actual first rounders should there be? How many second rounders should there be? As you went through it, what did you learn?
Yeah, this is a really, really good wide receiver class is what I learned. And we knew that, right? But I think, like, one fun thing about my job is how often you get to, like, check yourself, basically. So, you know, you'll do a mock draft and think, okay, like, here are my thoughts. And then you'll do a big board and you'll say, okay, you know, let me kind of double check those. Then you'll, you know, have to draw a line in the sand with your first rounders and say, well, I can't have 40 first rounders. How many of these guys do I actually put a true first round grade on? You know, I came up with 18, which was honestly, it was more than I wanted even. Like, I, in my mind, I'm thinking like 15, 16 guys and ended up with 18. So it just goes to show how strong this class is. But the wide receiver position, you know, you guys have a great one there in Roma Dunze, Malik Neighbors, Marvin Harrison, but also getting Brian Thomas, Melishu, and Adonai Mitchell in there to have five wide receivers with a true first round grade, which really means like that they would be a first round pick in every draft, essentially. To have five wide receivers is absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, three offensive tackles in there as well, three quarterbacks, three offensive tackles, five wide receivers is a big chunk of that. And I think we'll see that play out on the Thursday night first round. It'll be a lot of quarterbacks, offensive tackles, wide receivers are going to dominate those first 32 picks.
Well, we're going to get to one. We're probably going to fight a little bit. You know, we've got enough relationship that we can debate and it can get a little contentious. Yeah. And we can go back and forth on one. But before we get to him, I'm going to guess you did not have a first round grade on Michael Penix.
I did not. Nope.
Second round grade on Michael Penix?
You want to know why? I have a second round grade. I have him as my number 36 overall player, which I'm not one of those people that artificially puts quarterbacks just at the top, right? So, like, I don't have J.J. McCarthy's not in my top. He's
we're gonna
20 overall player.
Yeah, we're going to get to him in a second. We'll get to him in a second. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Sorry, Rock. I'll take my time. I don't want to jump ahead. I'll follow you, buddy.
Yeah. Let's just start with Michael. So 36 overall for you, huh?
Yep.
And is that – and how much of that – how much of that are two torn ACLs and two shoulders? Like, if he had no injury history whatsoever, where do you think he'd be?
No injury history, and he's 22. I think he would be in the top. I mean, he would be in the top 30, 25. It's hard to, like, it's I want to be fair to the process. It's hard to say, right, because that is such a big part of it. But I think top 25, I do have some concerns with his game outside of that, just like I do with every player, right? You know, we could run through every quarterback in this draft and say, here are your positives, here are your question marks. But take away the injuries and take away the age, and I would say top 25.
And then the actual issues on the field, what part of his game translates or concerns you or, just evaluate it? Obviously, we're really, really close to this and probably have a little natural bias to it. And I've seen him a ton and got a lot of background with him, as I do JJ. But what part of his game do you feel like may not translate quite as well?
I think there are times where he's, you know, he's forcing guys to chase balls a little bit. And I think that showed up more when he was asked to move than when he wasn't. When the pocket's clean, no one is prettier. And I think, you know, it's, I don't want to evaluate off of two games, but I think you can even look at his last two games and see that. You look against Texas, where that Joe Moore award-winning offensive line didn't let anybody through. My man was surgical. That's one of the best games I've ever seen a quarterback play. You watch against Michigan, where they were able to create some pressure and make him move, and his accuracy did fall off. And a lot, you know, even on crossing routes, like he has guys chasing balls a little bit. He's just not as accurate when asked to move. One thing that did impress me was watching him college football playoffs to the then jump to the combine, and I thought he had cleaned up some of those issues. And I'm not gonna like jump into like 40-yard times for running backs are pointless. The 40-yard time was good for him. It was because it showed his mobility. Now if he can tie those things together, you know, the improved mechanics and that mobility, that's where I think we could see him become, you know, the guy he was against Texas, because he's going to be more comfortable throwing on the move. And not just, I don't just mean as a runner, just moving. You know, when he's had to move his feet, I think that's when he does fall apart a little bit.
So you're not a big J.J. McCarthy guy, huh?
I mean, I like J.J. I don't think.
Doesn't sound like it. Doesn't sound like you do. It sure doesn't sound like you do.
I try to be, you know, with rankings, guys, I try to be true to my evaluation. And, you know, when I'm ranking a player, it is not in any way tied to where they will be drafted. So if I had to do a mock draft today, I would have J.J. McCarthy in the top six picks. I'm not going to rank him there just because he's going to be drafted highly, though. I think those two worlds live very independently of each other. That's how I've always done it. That's how I will always do it. And so just, you know, let's stack these guys up top to bottom. Who's the best player in the draft? Boom. One, two, three, you know, and I rank it like that. There are things I like about JJ. There are things that scare the heck out of me about JJ. And talking about another guy who had a shoulder injury in college that, interestingly enough, doesn't get talked about a whole lot. It was 2 years ago. But, you know, another guy who had a shoulder injury, he has a bit of a windup in his delivery. He has struggled at times throwing to his left. So as much as we talk about Michael's mechanics and those having to get better, JJ has some mechanical things that have to get better as well. And I did think at his pro day, he threw better than he did at the combine. So it does seem to be that he's working on that.
This is probably something I should have asked you ahead of time to give you some time to research it, but I'll ask you anyway. It's maybe you know it off the top of your head. Of all the guys that you've looked at, where are the biggest discrepancies between where you have them evaluated and where you think they will go? Meaning, who will be the best and worst value of the first few rounds?
Yeah. So McCarthy is the one. I mean, I have him ranked 20, and he'll be drafted. Like, I think he'll be drafted top six. J.C. Latham I have ranked at, like, 32, and I think he'll be drafted somewhere in the early teens. Those are the two that I know off the top of my head. I'm pretty different on Bo Nix. If he goes 12 to the Broncos, why have him rated in the 30s? So there's going to be a pretty big swing there as well.
What about the other direction? What about guys that you love, that you think are first round picks, maybe top 18, that might not go in the first round?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see where Terrion Arnold, the corner from Alabama, goes, because he didn't test well, but that dude's tape is just, I mean, it's exactly what I want, you know, in a corner who's physical. I love tough corners. Like, I get so discouraged in this day of, like, watching corners who don't want to even, like, jam guys anymore. It's like, if you're a physical corner, send me your tape. I'm going to love you. You're going to get talked about. Like, it's just something that it's so hard to find anymore. So I fall in love with those guys. So Arnold definitely fits that mold. You know, I'm a big Xavier Worthy fan, and I really thought there would be more hype around him after the 4-2-1 40 time because he was super productive in college. You know, he was a 3-year starter at Texas. He had 26 career touchdowns. He's like third all time in Texas football history in terms of touchdowns, receiving touchdowns, that is. And he's a great punt returner. So I don't know if it's because he's a little bit undersized and, you know, we've all been burned by smaller guys before, but I look at Devonta Smith, who weighs like a 170, and he's doing pretty great in Philly. Worthy's 165 and ran a 4-2-1. I thought there would be a little more love for him, but he's in my top 25, and I don't know of any other analyst who has him quite that high.
ESPN draft analyst Matt Miller here with us. Back to J.J. McCarthy and these quarterbacks, Penix and Bo and all of them kind of grouping together there, 4, 5, 6, however they're going to lay out. How much, Matt, in your grade, in that just evaluation that you talk about, that it isn't any mock draft, it isn't projecting, it's just simply my evaluation and my grade, how much intangibles go into that?
Yeah, as much, I try to factor it in a lot because it is really important. You know, the reality is, like, my time and access with players are not equal. You know, like, I go to the, you know, Michigan Pro Day, I'm going to get to spend time with J.J. McCarthy. I'm not assigned to go to the Washington Pro Day. Field Yates is. So Field's going to get to spend time with Michael Penix or whomever was there. It might not have been Field. I know Field was with Bo Nix. So, like, our time is not necessarily equitable, you know? So, like, and being I'm located in the Midwest. I'm going to go to watch practices at Missouri. I'm going to go watch practices at Arkansas. So you try to factor that in as much as you can. A lot of times you're relying on sourced information. You know, I'll talk to coaches at Washington. I'll talk to scouts in the NFL. You'll even talk to agents who may or may not have signed the player, and you try to learn about their experiences, you know? So it is I try to say this all the time. It's like taking a 1,000-piece puzzle, flipping the pieces upside, you know, dumping the box upside down. And you're trying to turn as many of those pieces over with information. So every little bit is valuable. I've been doing this since 2010. So you learn who to talk to and who not to talk to. You know, you learn what it looks like when someone's feeding you information and maybe when they're not, you know. So you try to learn as much as you can over the years. But it's all a complicated puzzle that you're trying to put together without always knowing what the picture is going to be like on the other side.
Could you look at the quarterbacks in this year's draft and compare them to Sam Howell in terms of, you know, the Seahawks went out, they gave up some level of draft capital in order to bring in Howell. I don't know whether it's fair to say where would he rate if he was here with these quarterbacks, because obviously there's age and there's, you know, you've actually gotten to see him in the NFL, but how do you think he compares to them?
So I famously didn't like Sam Howell and took a lot of grief for that, especially amongst Commanders fans once he was drafted. I thought he was, I could find the exact grade. I had him rated at 74 overall. I thought he was like a low end, you know, really a high backup guy. My comp for him was Colt McCoy. I thought he would just be, you know, a good QB2 in the NFL. So when I look at these guys, I would take, you know, all the top six way over him, you know, Williams, Daniels, May, McCarthy, Nix, Penix, in whatever order you want to put them in. All those guys are much higher than him. I think Howell, even Spencer Rattler, I would take Spencer Rattler over Sam Howell. And that's not based on me saying, okay, I watched the struggle of Washington last year. That's based on where I had him before the draft. So, you know, I think there's some things about Sam that you like. I mean, he's a beautiful deep ball thrower. He's got some good mobility. He's tough. We saw that last year. He needs a comfortable spot to shake some of his bad habits. He's got to get the ball out faster. He's got to, you know, I think his intermediate passing is at times really, really, it's late and it's inaccurate at times, but you know, this is a good QB2. And I think in this scheme, that Seattle's running, you know, we saw we'll see how similar it is to what they did at Washington last year, but they love the deep ball. And that is what Sam Howell does best, is the deep ball. So I think, if you want to marry those two things together, say, hey, Ryan Grubb, they're going to air them ball out. They're going to chuck it down the field to these dudes. Well, that is what Sam Howell does best.
Matt, my last couple questions here will zero in a little bit more locally. 13 Huskies went to the combine. The pro day was extraordinary. Field was on with us the other day just talking about, wow, you know, the factory that this year's Husky football program is and the number of guys they're going to produce. Go ahead. Obviously, I think I know some of your order here, but talk to me about the 13 guys there and maybe the top of it. And maybe is there a sneaky one, a Husky, that you're like, man, he may go late or he may be a mid-rounder, but I really like his NFL prospects.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Rome is the guy. And Rome is my number two over. He's my number two receiver, my number three overall player. I am a massive Rome Odunze fan as a player, as a person, like as a human being. I think he's fantastic. So I'm way, way up there on him. And it will be shocked if he's not a great NFL player. I have Fatanu. I have in my top 16. I had a true first-round grade on him. Really big fan of his play. I tweeted this once. I was kind of late to the party on him because I was like, yeah, he's already being tackled. I don't even really care. He's just really, really good. I think he could be a tackle for some teams. If he's a guard, he's going to be a great one. Penix, we talked about a lot. Braylon Trice, I'm a fan of. I know the testing wasn't great, but that dude, just turn the tape on. That is an NFL player, and he absolutely wrecked Texas, and I can't get that out of my head. You know, Polk and McMillan, I think, will be NFL starters. Rosengarten will be an NFL starter. Heck, I think Dominic Hampton will be an NFL starter. Dylan Johnson's going to be a high rep running back. It is a loaded, absolutely loaded group. And up there with Michigan, as far as the most talent I've seen from one team this year. I would say it's probably, you know, Michigan, Washington, Texas are probably the three, if I had to go off the top of my head, in terms of just crazy NFL talent from this group.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Michigan, because that's the other connection point here, obviously, with the new head coach. Are there mid to late round Michigan fits for Seattle, guys that would, you know, maybe especially if you knew them well defensively, that you might say, hey, this is somebody who could really help out McDonald's team?
Yeah, and it's funny, not just because of the McDonald connection, but Ryan Grubb had a game plan for these guys. So he knows that Michigan defense really, really well. I mean, I think, you know, you always look at a guy like Mike Thaner still, you know, knowing that Seattle has made some really, really big changes in the secondary this year, and saying, okay, like Mikey could play back there. You know, he could play as a nickel corner. He could play as an outside corner. He could play as a safety. Like, he just fits in well. And not to say that, you know, secondary is a huge, huge need, but there's been enough turnover there. And I think he certainly fits.
Is there room for him and Witherspoon on the same team?
I think so. I actually think Devin could play inside or outside. Again, Devin was my number five overall player last year. I love Devin Witherspoon, so he could play anywhere. I will jump on the table for Junior Colson any day of the week. I absolutely love him. Same for Mike Barrett, like one of those two Michigan linebackers. And that's another spot where, Seattle signed a couple dudes in free agency to be inside backers. But, you know, Barrett is a late rounder. Colson's a second rounder for me. But those are dudes that I would try to find a way to get them on my team.
How valuable is the number 16 pick? If you were John Schneider and you end up there and you want to trade back because they don't have a second rounder and we don't know what's going, you know, they have one third rounder, they traded away one of them. How valuable is the number 16 pick in this year's draft?
It got a lot more valuable today with the Bills trading Stephon Diggs, because I think we're trying to figure out where that fourth wide receiver comes off the board. That is something that is certainly a question mark now of, okay, where does wide receiver four factor in? And that's where, you know, if you are, you know, Buffalo trying to get up there, even some of these teams in the 20s, there's going to be such a run on offensive tackles now that if you're one of those teams and you say, hey, we can't wait, we cannot afford to sit and wait, we got to go get a tackle. I think 16 becomes pretty valuable in that regard as well. So it is valuable. I still think Byron Murphy would be, you know, he's perfect for McDonald's defense. That's your Justin Madubuike type player. I would be very excited to see him there. Obviously, you know, offensive line has been something a lot of people have talked about. But if Byron Murphy's there, I think you take him. If he's not, then you talk about trading back.
Last thing for me, you know, we've heard famously with Ozzie Newsome for all those years, he's a Raven. Like, you know, part of the reason they were so good and have been so good and continue to be, like, we know exactly who we are, what we are, and this is a Raven. If you were to do that now with a Mike McDonald and a Ryan Grubb scheme added in with the 14 years of stability with Schneider and say, okay, this dude right here, I don't care what you say, this guy or a couple guys, these are Seahawks. I could see this guy, maybe a couple guys. These are absolute Seahawks. Anybody resonating that way in this draft?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to, I think Michael Barrett from Michigan is that type of guy, just, you know, super hard-nosed. Jarvis Brownlee from Louisville, it, you know, reminds me of that, just hard-nosed players who, you know, physical in everything that they do, And, you know, Jarvis is going to be like a round four player. So not necessarily an early round pick. Jalen McMillan, I think Jalen to me is exactly what Grubb's offense needs. Now, Seattle has three great wide receivers. So I don't know that, you know, I don't know that we see that play out necessarily, but it is certainly a fit, you know, of this is probably the type of player that they're looking for. But I'll be excited to see what the offensive line, you know, looks like. You know, is it Fatanu and you just plug him in at left guard? Is it, you know, do you go back to those Michigan roots and say, hey, Zach Zenner is a guy who, you know, unfortunately had a late season injury. It's going to make him a much better value in this draft class. Do you wait on a Zach Zenner and say, okay, we've seen this, we're comfortable with it, you know, kind of marry the two systems together a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think we are going to see, like you were saying there with, you know, you knew what a Raven was. It was always these, it was a productive player from a big school and who was tough. That was what Ozzie Newsom did consistently. Every dang year, you would watch a guy fall in the draft like Kyle Hamilton, and you're like, dang it, he's going to fall right to Baltimore, isn't he? And it happened. It feels like every year they would do that. And so it'll be fun to see if Seattle – yeah, I feel like Seattle's been that way to some degree, too. Like, you watch Jaxon Smith-Njigba falling down the board, and you're like, well, they're Seattle. They're going to take him. And so, you know, marrying that with, you know, Schneider's philosophy with what these guys are bringing in, I think it's just be a really, really fun mashup of those, you know, core principles when building a team.
All right, last thing here, and hopefully we can chat with you one more time right before the draft would be great. But one last thing, just because the Diggs trade was just made and because I've been annoying everyone here in Seattle by talking about the possibility of trading DK Metcalf, does the return for Stephon Diggs in any way affect a potential return for DK if you were going to try to deal him this offseason?
I don't think so, just because Diggs was so outspoken. And I think that is why, you know, he hurt his value, honestly. And then the fact that Buffalo has to take on $30 million in dead cap to trade him, I think those situations are really, really different. So I don't see that being the case. Without knowing, you know, off the top of my head, DK's contract situation, that can sometimes factor into it. You know, it's like, hey, yeah, we got to turn around and pay this guy. That's going to decrease what we're getting back in the trade. But I don't know that. I think Diggs' situation was pretty unique. You know, the last 2 years, it has felt like he's done everything possible to try to get himself out of Buffalo, and he's finally managed to do that.
Great stuff, man. Everybody should be reading everything that Matt writes this time of year, really all times of year, but especially now. Should be following him on the X platform, NFL Draft Scout. He's Matt Miller, and we really enjoy him. Matt, let's see if we can catch up one more time before the draft.
Sounds great, guys. Appreciate you.
Awesome. Love talking to Matt. And if you missed any of that, go back and listen to it on seattlesports.com or the Seattle Sports app, because he really does a fantastic job getting everybody ready for what will be in just 3 weeks, the NFL draft. And you can listen to the whole thing, of course, here on Seattle Sports. All right. Coming up next, the Mariners have not played good baseball. Sometimes stats can lie. In this case, I don't even know if they truly show the whole story. So what's truly the problem and what needs to change? It's next on Brock and Salk.